don't know about it. It's coded.
You have the key.
No, it was always open.
Something was the key.
Oh,
that one is the key.
And it's in the back of the phone. Right?
Is it?
We're coming up to some short blocks, and we'll have a chance to catch up easily.
What's the
No, that's the reason today. We're not as far behind as we were before. We're still far behind.
Yeah,
but eventually, we're still behind. But it's fine. We'll. All right. So we are holding on to Zion of Adala, six lines from the bottom of 2. There should be a thing for control point in there, I think.
Are we doing AC?
Conditioner.
CA, whatever it's called. Or...
Air conditioner.
You don't want to be conditioning, you want to be air.
Wow, look at this.
Air.
Well, you guys are talking. They're doing the real thing.
Okay. Amar of Zilcher Baturvi Amar Dara. Ain't Omer Kiddush Hayyah and El Ala Yayin Hagoy the Nasech Agabe Mizbeah. You can only say Kiddush on Shabbos and Yom Tov on the kind of wine that is suitable to be poured on the Mizbeah, the Misafi. Because otherwise, the Rashbam says, as the Gemara is going to tell us on our face, it's something like Rizeyu Nol Pesach Sefer. Is it appropriate to offer to the Eivishter, for the Sofim, or for Kiddush, something that you wouldn't even offer like to a human governor? It's that quality stuff. Okay, so the question is, L'mo'utim Man, what is Rab coming to exclude by that statement? Elaim L'mo'utim Yayin Mizbeah. Well, we have to figure, what kinds of wine are and aren't kosher for the Sofim? And we also have to figure out, there's like this. On the one hand, we have to figure out, we're saying any wine that's possible from the Sochem is possible for Kiddush. So we have to figure out what is kosher from the Sochem and what is possible. We also have to figure out, the flip side of it is, we are talking about something that is considered wine. Thus, for example, we're going to bring in what we had yesterday, the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlomo Levi about whether wine that tastes like, whether if it tastes like wine and smells like vinegar, is it considered wine or not? That's going to come into play. If you're right. We said it, halacha is like a b'yechanan, fine, but in the Gemara it doesn't say that halacha is like a b'yechanan. The Rishonim said that halacha is like a b'yechanan. We're still going to bring it in, according to the Rishonim, maybe that's not wine. Of course you can't make Kiddush on it. So, Yilem l'mo'ut yayin megita, you're going to tell me that we're trying to exclude wine fresh out of the vat, meaning grape juice, before it had a chance to ferment. What's the problem with that? Well, Tony Rapia, Yain Migita Lo Yobi, Mehavi Kosher. But Rapia taught a brother that when it comes to Nisafim, Lachatchila, you should not bring grape juice because it's supposed to be Haseich Nesach Shecha, it's supposed to be wine capable of making you drunk, meaning that it has alcohol in it. Mehavi Kosher. But if you did use grape juice for Nisafim, B'dievet, it's kosher. Because as the general rule that only when the Torah repeats something twice is it ma'asid. Here it doesn't repeat the word Shecha twice. Also, the Rashbam says, also since it says Haseich Nesach, implies, no matter what, as long as it's some kind of reasonable method, then it's okay. Nesek means the pouring of water.
And it says Kiddush Yom, does that mean the daytime and the night?
No, primarily it means the nighttime. The poskim do talk about it, they're talking about the daytime one also, which is less important, but the halacha is that the same didn't apply to both. Anyway.
Well,
so. You can offer, that's what we're saying. You can't, L'chatchila you're supposed to offer wine that has alcohol in it. But B'dievet, if you use grape juice, it's okay. Well, we're not going to say Kiddush is more stringent than the Sofer. We're going to say the Pashtus is less stringent. It's only Midrash Rabbah. I mean, Kiddush itself is Midrash Raisa, but the concept of using wine is not necessarily Midrash Raisa. So Midrash Raisa, you can be Yotzer just by saying the Parashah by Kovu. So if by Nisofer it's Kosher B'dievet, by Kiddush it should be Kosher L'chatchila. Incidentally, there is a good deal of discussion among the later poskim, among the more poskim closer to our time, does this apply to modern-day grape juice, where it can never ferment because they pasteurize it or whatever they do to it exactly to prevent it from ever fermenting, or are we talking doctor about the kind of grape juice, which if you left it, eventually it would ferment and turn to wine.
Wow.
The accepted halacha is that either time is okay. The accepted halacha by...
Halacha. Oh.
That you are allowed to use grape juice, even commercially sold grape juice, which is never going to pasteurize, which is never going to turn into wine. Nevertheless, it's still kosher for kiddush. Okay.
Because
it's the same logic over here. We're saying that grape juice is kosher b'diyevet for nesachim, and if it's kosher b'diyevet for nesachim, then it's kosher l'chila for kiddush. And they don't make that distinction between whether it could ferment or not.
Even though
in theory you could make such a distinction. Kivan deem heavy kosher. Well, therefore, given that if b'diyevet you use grape juice, it would be kosher for nesachim. Anan, then we, when we make kiddush, after l'chila nami, we should do l'chila. Be able to use grape juice. Tosfos actually discusses over here the question of yayin mevushal. Is yayin mevushal considered wine or not? Or can it be used for kiddush? Again, there is it does mention in Shulchan Aruch an opinion that you can't, but the halacha is that you can. You see that everybody uses yayin mevushal nowadays. And Omar, really ve'omar Rava, and we actually find that Rava explicitly said, Soichat Adam Eshkol Shalom, a person can squeeze out a cluster of grapes, make grape juice right there on the spot, right away, use it for Kiddush. Not right away, I mean, you can't squeeze them on Shabbos, but you squeeze them ahead of Shabbos, and then you immediately make Kiddush as soon as possible after that, you make Kiddush even before the Yom. The point is, yes, you can use grape juice. So when we say wine, nobody disagrees with Rava on that.
Nobody
disagrees with Rava. So therefore, if we see that you're able to use grape juice for kids, so we see two things. First of all, it's only b'diyevet possible. It's only the hachila possible for nesach and it's tasha b'diyevet. Second of all, the hachila is tasha for kiddush. So it can't be that's what Rav is trying to exclude by saying anything that's possible for nesach and is possible for kiddush. Okay, are you going to say that maybe Rav is coming to tell us that you can't use for kiddush wine from the top of the barrel or from the bottom of the barrel? The problem is, when it comes to Nesachim, you're not supposed to, because the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us in Masechta Menachos, we're discussing these dinim, that the top of the barrel tends to have, if there's mold or whatever in the barrel, that tends to float to the top, the dregs and lees and whatever on the bottom. So therefore, the middle of the barrel is the part where the good wine is, and that's what you're supposed to use for Nesachim. So you're going to say that maybe it means you can't use from the top or the bottom of the barrel for Kiddush. No. Again, same thing. Rapiyo also taught a b'raisa. You're not supposed to use from the top or the bottom of the barrel Hatchila for Nesachim, but b'diyevet it's fine. And again, b'diyevet it's fine for Nesachim, then the Hatchila must be okay for Kiddush. The Elul Ma'uta Yain Kushi Bore Kilyasta and Shalmartiv Shotzimukim. So you're going to tell me that maybe we're trying to exclude the following kinds of wine. Yayin kushi, which is black wine, meaning that it turned black. The word kushi literally means an Ethiopian. So therefore we use it for a black person, and therefore we also use it, in this case, for black wine. Yeah, let's say Esther got kushi, for example, black Esther. Yeah, that's
black wine.
If it oxidizes or whatever, then it's
different.
No, so that's the thing. It doesn't taste any different, but it looks different.
So according to this...
So are you going to say that maybe what it means is...
The
taste that they look at simple, not the taste. No, that's what we have to figure out. So kushi or borek, there's two different explanations among the Rishonim what borek means. One is that Ashbam says it means white wine, which is bad quality, and based on the Gemara later, a number of Rishonim say we don't mean where chila is white, we mean where it turned pale eventually, just like kushi is eventually turned dark. So lavan would be so this borek would be the other way, and eventually it turned white. The other explanation, the other girsa, is boidik, meaning that it's a very harsh wine. That's boidik, like you drink it and you feel like it's testing out your whole body. Anyway, so that's boidik. The third one is hilyastein, which is a light sweet, a very light sweet wine. Hilyastein comes from the word helios, which is the Greek word for sun. So it means wine that's made from grapes that have been dried, that have been left out in the sun for too long. So therefore, they develop more sugar. The wine made from them is very sweet. It's not like normal wine. I don't know if it's late harvest or just they leave them out to dry longer, or whatever. Anyway,
is that
so it'd be some kind of light wine. That's what we're trying to figure out. If that's maybe what Rav is saying, since those are possible for Nesachim, maybe also they're possible for Kiddush. That's what we have to figure out. Shalmautef, or wine from a wine cellar, meaning, as we learned before in the last couple of days, that wine that's in a wine cellar, sometimes you have some of it is starting to turn. So if you just at random take a barrel from there, you can't use it for Nesachim, and maybe you can't use it for Kiddush either.
hugely inclusive. I mean, only one.
No, but I mean, it means stam yaut, stam yain shel mautif shel nivda. The Rashbam says stam wine in a cellar that hasn't been checked to make sure it's still good, or shel tzimukim, or you would argue maybe we're talking about raisin wine. Well, Tanya, no, can't be, because we learn another b'raisa, but kulam lo yavi, all these five kinds, kushi, bodek, kilyastin, etc., you're not supposed to use for nesachim, v'im hevi kosher. But again, if you did use them for nesachim, v'di'evet they're kosher, again, v'di'evet for nesachim, l'chassil for kiddush. So you are allowed to use such things for kiddush.
Not because it's kiddush.
Because it's kiddush, because kiddush is less stringent than nesachim.
No, the interesting thing about Martif is that if you didn't check it, and you brought it v'di'evet, and then you smelled it with completely chomet, then
obviously it wouldn't be good for nesachim.
Right.
We're talking about the kind where, for example, where you didn't check, and it so happened this was good wine, but you should look chila.
It seems like it would be a different halach unto itself. Always check your wine before you say whatever.
Right. All right, the elul of yain koseis. So you're going to say that maybe it comes to exclude wine which is koseis, which again we talked about the other day, where it started turning ready, where it's starting to smell like vinegar, the kind that they typically sell in the stores, or bars, or whatever.
What's
the
koseis and koseis?
No. Yeah. Koseis is a singular koseis. Or mazub, or wine that was diluted with. Or wine that was diluted with water, or megula, or wine that was left uncovered, where you have a problem. We know throughout Shas that a snake might have drunk from it and injected venom into it, or v'shel shmorim, or wine made from shmorim, the temet that we talked about yesterday, where you take the dregs and pour water over them, and then take the liquid. V'sherecherah, or wine that smells bad. Now, we're not talking about smells bad like it turned vinegar before. Here, we're talking about the wine itself is still good, but you stored it in dirty cavies. So it absorbed a bad smell from the barrel. Those are the ones that on the face of it, those are the ones that Rav is talking about, where he's saying, since those are possible for Nesachim, they're also possible for Kiddush. And in fact, the Tanya, in fact, we learn in a Bible. Because that's obvious. If it's forever desire, of course, it's also Bana. There's no question about it. The Tanya, in fact, we learn in a place, the Kula Moyavi, all these four kinds, Kosis, Mogzul, Megula, and Shoshmarim, these five, Sherechera, all these five, Moyavi, you're not supposed to use them for Nesachim, the Imhevi Possel. And if you did use them for Nesachim, it's Possel. So maybe then Rav is talking about one or more of these five kinds and saying that those are Possel for Kiddush. The question is, Lamutimah, fine, but among those five, which one is Rav trying to exclude? Well, let's figure out. Elam Ote Koseis, if you're going to tell me that he's excluding Koseis, again, where it's starting to turn, why? Tvot de Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shulban Levi. That would depend on the machlokas of Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shulban Levi that we learned before. According to Rabbi Shulban Levi, fine, it's not considered wine at all. So, of course, you don't even say Bertriah Gavan on it. Of course, you can't use it. Of course, you can't use it for Kiddush. And if he means to say that I hold like Rabbi Yechon, he doesn't have to say you can use it for Kiddush. All you have to do is say that I hold like Rabbi Yechonon, and you make on it Baruch Yagofen, and automatically we'll understand. Given that you make Baruch Yagofen on it, then you can use it for Kiddush. So he shouldn't be talking about Kiddush. In other words, he should be talking about, do you say Baruch Yagofen or do you say Shakol on it on Yain Kosis? The fact that he doesn't say that implies that he's not talking about Kosis. The fact that he doesn't mention. The fact that he doesn't get to the more basic thing, do you say shagopin or do you say shakol on it, implies that that's not what he's trying to exclude with his statement. It is true that koseis is possible for nesachim, but he's not really addressing the question of whether you can use it for kiddush or not. E lema'uti mozu, or are you going to tell me that Zav is trying to exclude wine that's been diluted with water? Why? When it comes to Nesachim, it's true it's possible, but when it comes to Kiddush or benching or anything, Aluye Aluye, you've actually made it better. It should be more kosher for Kiddush. And in fact, Domer of Yosef of Chanina, Moedim Chachamim Rabbi Eliezer, because Chabracha, the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Eliezer, where even though they say that it's possible for Nisuch on the Mizbeach, but it's kosher if it's mixed, actually, the Rashbam says I don't really know where their original machlokas is, and so it's a shas that refers to a gemara and brachos where they talk about whether you're supposed to use. Well, the Rashbam says I don't know, but so it's a shas refers to a gemara and brachos that talks about the question what kind of wine are you supposed to use for benching for kosher bracha. Nevertheless, Moedim Chacham and Rabbi Lezner Kosher Bracha, She'en Mevoch and Olav, that you don't make a bracha on a Kosher Bracha, Ad She'itin L'Sechei Mayim, until you put some water into it, because it's not, you can't drink it as raw wine, like we were talking about yesterday, that wine was very strong or syrupy or whatever it was exactly. It was meant to be mixed with a few parts of water. So the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Eliezer that you have to put water into it in order to even be able to bench over it.
But today's kosher bracha.
Today's kosher bracha, not because our wines are much weaker, or they're not as syrupy or whatever. Yeah. So
why, when they say kosher bracha to be kosher bracha, they never drink from it?
Who says they don't? You're supposed to drink.
A lot of people don't.
See, whoever would bench it. That's because you haven't yet supposed to leave it for Abdullah in that case. If you finish Shalosh Shudas by the time the Meirav and Abdullah,
yeah.
Then yes, you can't drink it then. You can't drink before Abdullah.
People, they finish benching.
And they don't drink it, right?
And they don't drink it.
I've never seen such a thing.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to use it up.
I have no idea. But whoever made the drops, for prayer of governance, what's the drink?
We don't drink
it. Okay. All right. Anyway. Yeah, so we see then that when it comes to wine for kosher bracha, for benching, it is supposed to be mixed with water. So that means, in other words, mixing it with water makes it better, makes it more drinkable. Why should that possible for Kiddush? So obviously Rav can't be talking about that when he says that wine that's possible for Nesachim is possible for Kiddush. He must not be meaning
anyway,
that.
Can you add water for kosher bracha? You don't have enough wine?
You can add a little bit, but again, it really depends. I mean, all wines nowadays, first of all, don't need dilution, but second of all, like we were talking about yesterday, it also depends on the question how much water was added during the manufacturing of it in the first place. Because remember, we talked about yesterday, if the mixture ends up being less than 1/6 wine, you can't make a bracha on it anyway. So, yeah. A couple of drops probably wouldn't be a problem, but whatever. There are people even nowadays, I think, who have the minhag that they put in like 3 drops of water into the kosher bracha or something. I don't know, sardim necessarily. It's an idea of the Kabbalah because wine represents gevura and water represents chesed, so it represents mixing gevura with a little bit of chesed. Anyway, let's review. Rav can't be talking about koises, because again, that would depend on the machlokas of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechon, and he's not really addressing that. It can't be talking about diluted wine, because that would in fact be kosher for Abdullah. Ilam Utim Gula, are you going to tell me that Rav is trying to tell us that wine which is left uncovered is possible for Kiddush? Well, of course it's possible for Kiddush. What?
Why don't we have to use the word
Mechusa? Use the word what? Ilam Utim
uncovered.
Yeah, uncovered. Of course you can't use that sakana here. Of course it's a sakana to drink such wine even without dealing with the question of Kiddush. Nowadays it's not an issue because nowadays snakes are not common where we live. But in those days where it was a very common thing that a snake could come in and drink some of the liquid and then inject venom into it. So it's considered it's a dangerous thing. There's a whole Gemara in Abadazara and in other places in Shas that discusses this concept. Yeah. Even Ma'uti Shoshmorim, are you going to tell me that Rav wants to exclude the case that you can't make Kiddush on Temed? Question is, Hechidomi. Well, how much, what are the proportions of it here? Either Rama Tzloss of Asaba, if we're talking about, as we discussed yesterday, you poured in 3 cups of water, and afterwards you got out 4 cups of Temed, what's the problem? Chamer Malia. That's full-fledged wine. Again, we said yesterday, you can say very clear Gacha on it. Why shouldn't you be able to make Kiddush on it? Yes, yeah, that's if you poured in 3 and got out 4. No, if you poured in 3 and got out at least 4. Either Rama Tzlosova Osset Tzloso Paga, and if you're talking about you poured in 3 cups of wine and you got out 3.5, Tzlok to the Rabbanon V'Acherim, even that's subject to the Machlokas of the Rabbanon and V'Acherim. Again, the question there is it even considered wine? Again, Rav is saying about whether you can make Kiddush on it or not. If he's referring to that case, he should be saying a more basic question. Is it considered wine? Do you even say Bari Priya Gopan on it or not? And automatically, once we know whether you say Bari Priya Gopan, you'll know whether you can make Kiddush on it. So it can't be that he's talking about that. No, you have to say that, therefore, what Rav is talking about specifically is the case where the wine smells bad. That we don't know from any of the previous cases. That's the case that he's saying. Such wine is, it's a pack of full-fledged wine. You would say both for Yagot on it. However, it's possible for Nesachim. Therefore, it is also possible for Kiddush. That's what he's trying to say.
Is it possible for Abdullah?
Kiddush and Abdullah are the same thing. Or another possibility, you could answer that maybe Rav is also trying to tell us the case of uncovered wine. You're going to ask if it's a chana. What does he need to tell us? Not Kiddush. We know you can't drink it at all. The reason is, even if you strain it, like Rabbi Nechemya said, you can do it. The Gemara over there in various places where it discusses this concept of wine that's uncovered mentions that Rabbi Nechemya holds you can strain the wine. And then, if there was any venom in it, it floats to the top, tends to stay together. We describe it as looking kind of like a sponge, and therefore you can take it out, and you go. So Rav Nechemya would hold that such a thing is not a problem. Nevertheless, even according to him, even so, it's not right to use such wine because, like the pasuk says, offer this in front of your governor. Would he accept you? Would he show you any respect? It's such a gift. In other words, wine like that may have had venom in it, even if you strained it out. And Rav Nechemya says, therefore, it's safe to drink. It's still not safe to use for kiddush. So that would be. So there's two possibilities what Rav is telling us. Either you can't use wine that reichei ra, that smells bad, or that you can't use wine that was left uncovered even if you strain. There is, by the way, a big machlokas rishonim. What about, we know there are a number of other cases of wine that you can't use for the sake. For example, we chose to talk about wine that was cooked, yayin mevushel. There's also, for example, what if you mixed honey?
So Tosfos says you cannot use it.
Tosfos discusses the question pro and con about it, but I'm not saying that
conclusion.
Tosfos's conclusion is that you are able to use yayin mevushel. But wait, but so you have this yayin mevushel. There's also, for example, what if you have wine that you mixed honey into it? You can't use that from the sofen because you're not supposed to put honey on the mezbeach. You call service all bash like that too. Are we saying that that's possible for kiddush as well? So some of the shonim take the view that yes. Yain Mavusha would be possible for Kiddush on the basis of this Gemara, so would wine with honey mixed in, so would a couple of other cases. On the other hand, many other Rishonim take the view, Tosfos being one of them, that no, when we talk about wine that's possible for Nesachim is possible for Kiddush, we mean it's possible for Nesachim in that it's bad wine. Something was done, something happened to it that made it worse than it was before. As opposed to, for example, cooking it improves it, adding honey to it improves it, those kinds of things are not an issue. So I'm talking about if it brings both opinions, and then
honey, but wine and honey, not necessarily.
No, wine with honey. It makes it a tastier drink. So the in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions, and it says so. You have opinions that you're not supposed to use such things. You're not supposed to use yain mevushel. You're not supposed to use wine with honey, etc. The halacha is though that the halacha is that you can. The halacha is that we make. Rav Kahana, the father-in-law of Rav Mesharshia, asked the following question to Rav. What about, are you allowed to use white wine for Kiddush? Now, before Chivaya means white wine. We say every day in Keturah. So maybe Chamar Chivaya, that's it, yeah. But what if it's white wine? Now, first of all, the question is Rav Kahana asking about using white wine for Nesachim, or is he talking about using it for Kiddush? So the Rashbam brings both explanations. He says, I prefer the explanation that he's asking about. No, because we just said, for example, there are certain things that are, we said that there are certain things that are possible in the Nesachim, for example, diluted wine, but are kosher for Kiddush.
Because we said
that the Kiddush will leave.
So what are the two things that the Rashbam says?
So he says the first explanation is he says that the question is as far as Nesachim, can he use white wine for them? And the second explanation, which he says I don't like, is that we're talking about can you use it for Kiddush. So there's a lot of discussion about it, pro and con among the Rishonim, which explanation it is. Now, the second issue we have to ask is, we had a braisa before that mentioned Borek, and the Rashbam said that means white wine. So what's the question? So one possibility is that he didn't know the braisa. Again, like we said yesterday, and as we've said other times, not necessarily did Amaroyim know all the braisas. No, it doesn't have to be. They didn't know it, right. But there's also, Tosfos says that, no, the difference is, Borek is wine that's a lighter color, but it's not completely white. It would be like a rose wine, or like a rosé wine, or whatever like that. Nowadays, a pink wine. So that would be the Borek that we were talking about before, which clearly you shouldn't use for Nesachim, but the B'dievet is okay. Here we're asking about Chivalia, an actual white wine.
Borek comes from
a Lashon Borek, which means it's bright, because it has like a bright color to it. As opposed to over here, the chivayon would be very white wine. So what's the din? So can you use white wine or not? On the way, he says, like the prophet says, "Al tera yayin, don't look at wine to drink it. Ki yis adam, when it is red, because red wine makes you drunk." Which means, in other words, that red wine is what's preferable for misafim. So it comes out, according to the Rashbam's explanation of it, that what he's telling you is primarily wine should be red. That's why the prophet is making a point of mentioning the redness of wine. It's kodim l'misafim, because after all, though the misafim are supposed to be sheikh, they're supposed to be wine that will get you drunk. The Pasuk is implying that red wine has that special ability to get you drunk. Therefore, that should be the one. If you white wine would be kosher b'di'evet, maybe.
Why is it a strong wine?
It depends, but I guess the different kinds of white wine.
Red itself, the color.
The color itself, yeah, has a certain. Anyway, but you have various other explanations among Rishonim. What we're talking about over here, are we saying that white wine is not even kosher b'di'evet? And again, are we talking about the Misachim, and are we talking about the Kiddush? Again, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings an opinion that you shouldn't be using white wine for Kiddush, but again, it says that, but again, the halacha is not like that. By the way, you have a lot of people who are under the impression that when we have minig not to make Kiddush between 6 and 7, because at the time of Mad or Madin, some people have the impression that there's only a problem making Kiddush on red wine during that time, because red wine, red of Madin, but there's no problem with white wine. That's not it, though. The issue is regardless of the color of the wine. It's not the color of the wine per se. It's the fact that that's an inappropriate time to be bringing in Shabbos under that matter.
What you call white wine is yellow wine?
No, white wine that you buy in the store nowadays.
It looks yellow, but it's
whitish, yellowish, whatever. It's a very light color.
There's no real
mucker
for white wine.
No, not that I know. Yeah. Okay. There's no marker for the idea that if you want to make Kiddush between 6 and 7, that you can use white wine. There's no marker for that, as far as I know. You make Kiddush before 6, so you make it. You want to drink white wine. There is an opinion you shouldn't be using it for Kiddush on the basis of our Gemara. But the halacha is that that's not so, especially because in other contexts, in Hilchos Brachos, for example, in the halacha of the Bracha Atzei Bameitiv, it says that white wine is actually healthier for you. All right. Okay. Getting back now, the Mishnah told us that you have a case where you buy a bunch of empty barrels, kankanim b'shorin, called it. We said if you buy barrels in Shorin, in that area, the coastal area of Eretz Yisrael, then we said you have to accept 10 pitasos per 100. We said pitasos are ones of lower quality. A ton of, we learned in Abraisa, pitasos nois and mugaparis. They do have to be nice, and they do have to be treated or coated with sulfur. Because what happens is, we're not talking about, and the Rashbam says, when we say you have to accept 10 bad ones, we don't mean ones that are breaking apart. There's no reason you should even have to accept one of those bad ones. What we're talking about is these are barrels that are, they're nice, they look like other barrels, but they're a little bit cracked maybe, and therefore he applied sulfur to them to close up the cracks. So now, the sulfur won't make it that you can continue using them forever. They still won't last as long as barrels that were never cracked in the first place. Nevertheless, since they are usable in the short term, then you have to be willing to accept 10 of them.
It changes the taste.
No, apparently, I guess the sulfur is only on the outside. I don't know. You can use it for a little. You can use it for a little while. So therefore, you have to accept 10 out of 100. There's other explanations also. One interesting one is we said in the Mishnah that pitasos might also mean barrels that are not completely, that weren't completely fired, that are still where the clay wasn't completely fired. So according to that, nois of our Gemara over here would mean Meloshon HaTosfos Menu Na, as in half cooked, like the Korban Pesach. So they're nois, they're half baked, or Mugaparis, but then they're treated with sulfur, which helps keep too much of the wine from soaking into them. Because I guess once, I have no idea, but I guess once they've been half fired, then whatever, if you put them back in the oven, I guess it's not going to do any good yet. Now, the Rashbam points out that, why shouldn't you say, we talked about a couple of days ago, what if, for example, when you buy tura, or you buy grain, and you have more than a quarter calf per saw of dirt or kidneys or whatever it is, you have to sift it out, you have to take all of it out. What about over here, for example? What about if you have 11 pitasos out of 100, for example? Do you have to replace all 11, or do you only have to replace the one? He brings from the Tosefta, you only have to replace the one. Why? Because the logic is you can't say that the guy deliberately mixed in other bad barrels. That's not going to happen. He'd be too easily found out. You can't say that it You can't say that it's a tircha to you can't say it's a tircha to take out all of it, and therefore ordinarily a person is going to be mochel on a certain amount of it. So therefore, what we say is that that's it. You still have to keep the 10, but you're entitled to get refunded or to get replaced any of the other any of all the 10.
You know, there was a big question with Benedictine.
Yeah. What about it?
The fact that it was used by Henry.
I don't know. Now that's maybe that has to do with the sherry thing that we were talking about yesterday. I don't know.
Sherry
thing. Okay.
All right. We didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I've heard sporadically here and there over the years. I don't know. I'm not sure what's relevant to then. Okay.
They use wine, the young nectar, to make this liquor.
But if
the barrels that they use.
For the barrels, that's the same thing as the sherry cask that we were talking about yesterday. That we're a Moshe talks and a couple of the Strubas about it. That since the amount of wine that's left in there is so small, such a small amount, so heavily diluted, it can't really be considered wine. Right.
The interesting thing is that even though it's nothing to the Shavach, because you're.
Right.
But since it's Kilo Ba'alma, it's a whole big thing. It's not just like.
All right, let's continue. Mishnah says, "Hamoichu yayin lachaver to behechmit." Somebody sells wine to somebody else, and it became sour. Eni chayev b'achriyosai, so the seller is not chayev in the achrayus of it because when he sold it, it was still wine. Now we had a machlokas on that topic yesterday. We talked about Rav versus Shmuel. Rav said over there that the first 3 days the moichu is chayev, and it's after that he potter. So he would have to say our Mishnah is talking about if it happened after 3 days. Shmuel said over there that chamra kasvid demorah shavar, that it jumps along the person's shoulders. We have the Rashbam said over there that it depends on the person's mazel, so we'll see that in our Gemara over here. Or we have Tosfos and most other Mepharshim explain that it depends, that if it's poured from one keli into another, that causes it to spoil faster. So according to that, we'd have to be talking about over here that it's still in the original keli. V'im yadua sheyene machmit, however, if it's known that this particular seller's wine regularly spoiled in other years, for example, Hareza Mechaftos. Then it's a Mechaftos because then we have to assume that he wouldn't have bought it if he had realized that.
If he had known,
yeah. Which, by the way, that Rashbam points out, you know, at the beginning of the Peres, we talked about the question of what are most people buy it for? Do we hochem mamon atar roiv or not? Well, over here, half the people on average buy wine for drinking immediate in short term, or cooking or whatever, short term, and half the people buy it for long term storage. Therefore, there's no roiv even to go according to anything. So therefore, you have.
Does he have the obligation to tell him that his wife is not?
Could be. And if he doesn't, then when the guy finds out, he'll be a mecha tov.
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah. Okay. What if the seller told him, I am selling you wine which is, mevusam literally means perfumed, but here what it means is wine that'll keep its bouquet, wine that will last the way that wine is supposed to last for a good long time. Then what he has to do is he has to provide him wine that will stay good until Shavuos. Because after Shavuos, it's already the summertime, wine is going to spoil then in the heat anyway. But it has to be that it's able to stay fresh and good until
Shavuos.
No, wine is usually, grapes are harvested Elul Tishrei time. That's when wine is first made. We're talking about new wine that it has to be able to last in storage until Shavuos without spoiling.
Interesting. So, in other words, everybody drunk spoiled wine after Shavuos.
I guess that. Either that or they'd have to have some other way of keeping it. Yeah, I guess they'd have to have unless they could find some way of keeping it fresh, keeping it in cooler environments.
Not in Australia.
Yeah. By the way, there is the Beit Yosef, by the way, has a gear server here, not mevusam, but mevushol. Cooked wine. Same difference, though. The point is that it would have to last until Shavuos. Otherwise, the buyer would have a claim against him that you sold me no good wine. The Yashan, if he tells him I'm selling you old wine, then it has to be Michelle Ashtaka. It has to be wine that was made last year. Michelle Ashtaka. Ashtaka means last year. So if he tells him I'm selling you Yain Mavusam, then it means, for example, let's say this year is Tavshin Ayin Zayin, it would mean you have to sell him wine that was made during Tishrei Tavshin Ayin Zayin, El Ayin Vav or Tishrei Ayin Zayin. If he says Yoshon, it has to be wine that was made in Tishrei of Ayin Vav, so that by now would be a year and a half old. Or Miyushon, and if he says I'm selling you wine which is Miyushon, then it goes back another year, Mishal Gimel Shonim, then it has to be from 2 years back, from Tavshin Ayin Hay. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Yosi b'Chanina, Lo Shonu Ela B'Kankanim D'Lekeach. This that we're talking about, that you're not chayav if anything happens to the wine, is only if the wine is in the barrels of the buyer. Where then you have reason to say maybe that that his barrels are bad quality or whatever, and therefore the wine spoiled, and therefore the mosher is not chayav b'chulas. Or there's also the other possibility that we talked about, just the explanation. If it's the mocher's barrels, then he's chayav. This is what we're saying. Ein chayav b'achrius. Yes. Ela b'kankanim d'lekeach. Alav b'kankanim d'mocher. But if it's still in the barrels that the seller sold it to him in, mati amalei, then the lekeach is able to tell him hocham rakva kankanach. Look, this is your wine. This is your kalim. Obviously, your kalim caused it to spoil. Meaning, in other words, evidently, what must have happened is it must have already started spoiling when it was in your barrels beforehand. We just didn't notice it yet. Now, again, the Rashbam says we would have to say then, according to Rav's explanation previously in the Gemara, we would have to say then that we're talking about it. We would have to say again that our Mishnah is talking about that it's in the Lekeach barrels, but it's within 3 days, and that's why he said the Mocher. That's why he's saying the Mocher is Chayev. Or in the Kankanim of the Mocher, or any time even after 3 days, and therefore the end. Okay. Yeah. So there are, by the way, Rishonim who learn that what you have here is three different opinions. You have Rav, you have Shmuel, and you have Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina. You have other Mefoshim. We said yesterday that Tosfos understood Shmuel's statement, Chamra, Kaspa, Demara, Shavar, to be similar to what Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina is saying over here, because it's poured from one barrel into another. That makes it spoil faster, in which case it comes out Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina is basically saying the same thing as Shmuel, just in other words. Okay. Okay, the question is, if it's in the Mocher's Kankanim, so we're saying if it's in the Kankanim of the Lekeach, then we're saying that the seller is not Chayav Bachriyos, because he can say it's your fault, you shouldn't have poured it into your container.
You can say, but you moved it from barrel to barrel.
No, you, the buyer, poured it into your own barrel. You could have chosen that you'll take a barrel from me and just use it as is, and like Joseph said over there, carry it slow or whatever, yeah. So the question is, so what if it's barrels that belong to the mocher? Why is the mocher on the hook? Why can't he tell him, you shouldn't have kept it around for so long. It's not my fault that you kept it around long enough for it to spoil. Yes, but Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina would understand that the Mishnah is talking about where he told him, as we discussed the other day, that he says, I need it for cooking, and therefore I expect to be using it little by little over a long period of time.
How much?
However long it is, however long it typically takes to use a barrel of wine for cooking.
Yeah, sure, it'd be the maximum. Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, what makes Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina feel that he has to be doichik and say that the Mishnah is talking about such an unusual case where, number one, it's in the lekeach barrel, and he told him, I need to buy it from mikvah. Why doesn't he just say more straightforwardly? The Mishnah is talking about the mocher left it in his own barrel. The guy didn't say anything about mikvah or not. So the mocher is not chayav b'chulas, because there's no reason to think that if he didn't say mikvah, then the mocher can say you shouldn't have taken so long using it.
After Shavuot, it's fine.
But no, the question is like this. It's spoiled sometime during the year. It's spoiled sometime during the winter. It's spoiled sometime during the winter or whatever.
So why doesn't
Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina just say, either way, whether it's in the lekeach or the mocher's barrel, the mocher should have the ability to say, you didn't have to hold on to it for so long. You could have bought this barrel of wine and drunk it in the next 2 or 3 days or whatever, and it wouldn't have spoiled. You left it for months on end, weeks or months on end or whatever, and it spoiled. That's not my problem. Why does Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina have to say that we're talking about a case where he specifically says, I bought it from mikvah, and therefore that he expects to be using it over a long period of time?
Didn't he say previously that he wouldn't have until Shavuos?
If he said Yain Mavusam, if he says I'm selling you good wine, it has to be able to stay good until Shavuos.
It's only Mavusam.
In other words, Shavuos is the maximum time, right? But we're talking about it on time. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about you kept it for you. We're talking about you kept it for on the faith of it. We're talking about you bought it in Tishrei time, right after it was made. You bought it Tishrei time, let's say, right after it was made, or you bought it Nissan time, let's say, by the time it finishes fermenting, by the time it's actually wine, by the time it's developed enough alcohol to be considered wine. Fine, you bought it in Nissan. You didn't end up using all of it up until mid-year. You come and you look at it in a year and you find it's spoiled. Why shouldn't we say, in that case, the Moshe can say, well, why'd you take a whole month drinking it? Why does Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina have to understand that our Mishnah, that the specific case when the Moshe is not Chayav Achri Yosei, is the case where it's in the Moshe's barrel, but he says, I need it to mikvah, I'm going to be using it gradually. Why doesn't he just say straight out? It doesn't matter whose barrel it is. You shouldn't have been keeping it that long. Rava says the reason why Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina couldn't learn the Mishnah that way is because then he had a problem with the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah continues that if he knows, if it's a known thing that this particular seller's wine regularly spoils sooner than in the Mechatos, so am I. Now why should it be a Mechatos? Again, why shouldn't the Moshe have the ability to say, yes, of course it spoils if you leave it for a month or two, but who told you to leave it for that long? You could have used it sooner. Sure, you can't keep my wine until Shavuot, granted, but I never said I'm selling you Yain Mevutam. I'm just selling you plain old wine. You should have been using it up in the next week or two. You kept it for a month. That's not my problem. Why is it a Mechatos? Because
like you buy banana and you return them 2 months later.
No, but he doesn't have to tell him. He doesn't have to tell him. Ordinarily, we should assume the Moshe should have the ability to assume you're buying wine. The Sama, you're buying it for drinking short term. Therefore, if the Lekeach comes back a couple of weeks later and says it's spoiled, why shouldn't the Moshe be able to say, tough luck?
No, because I've never heard of a Moshe, a wine seller, who says to his client, or doesn't say, but he expects that the wine will be good only for a few weeks.
But the Moshe should be able to argue to the Lekeach, why is it my problem that you kept it around so long? I didn't tell you I'm selling you Mevusim, which is going to be good till Shavuot. You
should. Argument to make.
What do you mean there's a better argument?
You might have left your wine in the sunshine and it's going to turn.
If you have evidence that he left it in the sunshine, of course. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about he kept it where you normally store wine. But the Mishnah is telling us that it's a metachtos, if we know that his wine normally spoils. Even if you know his wine normally spoils, all that means is his wine usually doesn't last till Shavuot. It lasts a couple of weeks. Fine, still the Moshe should be able to argue it's not a Mechatos. You bought wine, you could have drunk it within those couple of weeks. Because of that question, El Alav Shemamina Dom Le Mikvah. Obviously, then, we have to understand that the second case of the Mishnah, in Yadua Shigene Machmet, is talking about where the buyer said, I'm buying it for Mikvah. I need it long term. I need it long term. Whatever, Tosh, words, I need it long term. I need
the only way to ask for long term is to say Mikvah?
Unless you say Yain Rebusin, yeah. So once we understand it that way, then we also understand that the first case of the Mishnah is also talking about that he bought it from Mikvah. And therefore, of necessity, the only way to say the only way to be able to say that the Mercher would not be chayav, given that he knows that this Lekeach is buying it for long term, would have to be if it's in the barrels of the Lekeach. Because if it's in the barrels of the Mercher, he should be responsible. He knew the guy is buying it at the store long term. So if it's poured into the barrels of the Lekeach, the Moshe has the ability to argue, okay, your barrels are bad quality, it's not my problem. So that's what forced Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina to understand the Mishnah the way he does. Shema Amina, good, that proves that that's how you have to understand. However, the Gemara says, Pliga de Rabchiya bar Yosef. This explanation of Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina disagrees with a statement by Rabchiya bar Yosef. The Amar Rabchiya bar Yosef. Chamra mazlo de morei gori. When it comes to wine, the mazel of the owner of the wine causes it to spoil, can cause it to spoil faster. The mazel, meaning what his mice, what he does. So therefore, the Moshe is not responsible, whether it's in the kingdom of the Moshe or the kingdom of the Lekeach, because it spoils faster. Shenamar, and he has a pasuk to back him up. The pasuk says, "Ba'achia yayin voided," even when the wine is treacherous, meaning that it turns, it spoils. Boigan means treacherous, like betrayed. The wine betrays the owner by turning sour. Because Gever Yahir, he's a proud person. Yahir means proud, like you are. So, in other words, why does wine betray a person? Why does it become sour faster than expected? Because he's a Baal Geiva. And the Rashbam explains, actually, Midah Keneged Midah. He's a Baal Geiva. He claims accomplishments or whatever that he doesn't have. Therefore, his wine also doesn't end up being, his wine also ends up not being what it should be. You think that it's wine, and you open up the barrel and find that
you don't base it off on my
daughter. It's a pasuk, and then the pasuk is telling us a fact, and therefore, that's acceptable by law.
Gilling milk of almonds,
basically, yeah. So now, we're going to have a little bit of agadta on this pasuk. Now we talked about the halacha from it. Now we're
going
to talk.
Really,
this is what it is. According to the Rebbe by Yosef. According to the Rebbe by Yosef. Now relax. The halacha is not like the Rebbe by Yosef. The halacha is like Rabbi. Well, I should say the halacha is like the Yosef of Kanina, according to the assumption that he's saying basically the same as Shmuel did the other day. We said the halacha is like Shmuel when it came to wine. According to Tosfos and most of the other Rishonim who understood Shmuel from saying when wine is poured from one container into another, that causes it to spoil faster. That then Rabbi Yosef of Chanina in our Gemara is saying basically the same thing, just in other words, because he's distinguishing between whether it's in a barrel or a mosher or a mekayach, and then the halacha is like that. If we were to understand Shmuel's opinion over there, the way that the Rashbam understood it, which is actually similar to the Priya Bar Yosef's statement over here, that it depends on the mazel, on the mice and the person, then it would mean the halacha is like the Priya Bar Yosef. And Shulchan Aruch is not going that way. Okay. Amar Amari. Haiman v'yavir. Here's another thing we learned from that passage. A person who is proud, a person who is a Baal Geiva, afilu in shebeisir le'mekabel. He's not even accepted. His authority is not even respected by the members of his household. Meaning Rashbam says his wife. Shenema, the passage. Well, primarily in shebeisir in the Gemara usually means his wife. But yeah, I guess it would be his children as well. Shenema, the passage continues. The whole passage goes like this. Afki ayayim boigid gever nahir v'lo yinder. The simple meaning of it is talking about how a person drinks wine and feels proud and can't get along with anybody and whatever. It's more of doushing it. Again, the first part was Va'afkia Yain Boigid. The wine betrays the owner by turning sour. That is because Gever Yahir is a proud person. Now we're doushing in that Gever Yahir together with the next few words. Gever Yahir V'lo Yinze, which is a proud. It's a pasuk in Chavakuk. It's a pasuk in Chavakuk. Gever Yahir V'lo Yinze. A proud person that lo yinve. My lo yinve. So what does lo yinve mean? It means benave shaloi. Means in his own house. Nave means the house. So therefore it means gever yahir. A proud person, lo yinve, he's not even respected in his own house.
There's many other things other than yahir that can become make someone disrespect.
Of course, but we're saying this is one of them. And another thing on this. Omer of Yehuda Amar Rav, Talmud Goy the Talos Shal Tamid Chacham the Ena Tamid Chacham, a person who prides himself on wearing the Talos of a Tamid Chacham when he's not really a Tamid Chacham. What is the Talos of Tamid Chacham? Rashbam refers to a Gemara that we had earlier in our Masechta during the time when I was away, where we said that the Tamid Chacham dresses differently than everybody else. He makes sure that his Talos hangs down far enough that none of his legs are exposed. So a regular person, not a Tamid Chacham, who dresses in that style. Rabbi Gershon gives a different explanation. He says, not a talus, per se. Everybody has to wear a talus. He says it means the sudr, it means the headscarf, the turban, or whatever the Talmud Chacham used to wear in those days. So a person dresses like that when he's not really a Talmud Chacham, ein machnis inoise b'mechitzah shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not brought into the mechitza of the Eveshtim, meaning he doesn't get to be close to the Eveshtim in Ganei. Ksiv hachav ala yinveh, because... Why is that? Ksiv hachav ala yinveh, again, he's actually from the Talmud. Because here it says that a person is proud in the sense of being priding himself on being a Talmud Chacham when he's really not. So it says, v'lo yinveh. So, v'chsiv asana, nevei kotshecha. We have a passage in Oz Yashir that says that refers to nevei kotshecha, the habitation, the dwelling place of your holiness, meaning in context there it means that it's mitzvah, but here the Gemara is daushin and mean ganei, the close place to the Ebeshe and ganei. So he's v'lo yinveh, he doesn't get into that knowledge. There is, by the way, there is on the other hand, there's a story involving the Alter Rebbe where a couple of Siddim came to him one time and complained to him about one of the Siddim who was traveling this like a chassid when really he's not. He's acting like a chassid when really he's not. And the Alter Rebbe was it snagged him? I don't know. I thought that the way I heard the story was it was Siddim with the Alter Rebbe who came and told on it. Okay, whatever. Anyway. So the Alter Rebbe said to them, in that case, it should happen to him like it says at the end of the Mishnah. They all got nervous. What does that mean? He's cursing them or something?
Mm-hmm.
He's cursing him. He's cursing this guy that they meant to tell the Alphadeva that he should tell him off or whatever, not to get him in trouble. The Alphadeva explains to them, no, the mission at the end of Masechta Peah that says that a person pretends to be blind or deaf or lame or whatever in order to get Rachmanos from people and collect Zaka. By the time, but he won't die before he actually becomes like that. Well, the Alphadeva said, on the same basis of a hero, a person is pretending to be a chassid, eventually he'll actually become one. Yeah. So here we're talking about our Gemara, we're talking about dressing like one but making no effort to actually act like one. That story is talking about how a person acts in a chassidish way, even if he doesn't feel it inside, eventually he will develop it. Yeah. All right, back to the Gemara. Omar Rava, Haiman de Zabin le Chavis et de Chamre le Chanva. If somebody sells a barrel of wine to a merchant, which actually now the Rashbam explains, we're not talking that he actually sells it to the guy. What he's doing is he's giving it to him on consignment, basically. We'll talk in a minute. Tosis explains a little differently, but let's start with the Rashbam. He gives it on consignment to this guy. He hands it over to him. He makes him a shliach, basically. A daitel of sabuyi, where the deal is going to be that this merchant, this storekeeper, will sell it in his store. We'll retail it in the store. He'll sell it cup by cup to people who come into his store, and eventually, so he'll make money from it. Some of that money, the storekeeper will keep for his trouble, and the rest will go to the owner of the rest will go back to the owner of the barrel. The takif apalga oyatilsa, and it becomes half of it or a third of it becomes sour. He didn't manage to sell all of it fast enough, and then some of it ended up becoming sour. Dinahu de makabel lomine. The din is that the balabas has to accept that whole hefsek. The loyamara now.
It's still,
it doesn't matter whose barrel it is, but apparently it's the same barrel that he sold. Well, yeah, because the loyamara and elav leshani bebarza. First of all, though, this din would only apply if the storekeeper did not change the position of the faucet. You mentioned yesterday that sometimes they would make a hole in a barrel and install a faucet. I think, by the way, the difference is, like you were mentioning that yesterday, and you see that in our Gemara over here. I think the difference is, if you're regularly going to be using from the barrel, you're regularly going to be taking cupfuls of wine out of it at a time, you'd install a faucet. Yesterday we were talking about you're using a barrel where gradually you're going to make the whole thing truma, and then eventually take the whole barrel and give it to the client. There's no reason to install a faucet. You just open up the top, and you just take a sip from it to make sure it's still good. Anyway, here, if he changed the location of the faucet, that moving it around, that whatever, may have an effect. It may cause the wine to spoil. Then the storekeeper has to accept that loss, because then that's his fault for doing that.
He didn't supervise him?
No, we're talking about the storekeeper had a new faucet put in a different place,
right?
Because the other one was in a convenient location or whatever. That's his problem. He may have caused it to spoil faster. Rabbeinu Gershom gives a different explanation of it. He says that what we're talking about, if he installed the faucet too low down where the dregs are, that could make it spoil faster. Okay. Avoshoni bebarza, but if he changed the location of the faucet, like, then we don't say that the owner of the barrel is the one who bears the responsibility or bears the loss. The storekeeper has to bear that loss. And loyamaran elderly mother yomer de shuka. Also, we're only talking about if in between, before the wine spoiled, there wasn't a market day yet. Avon mother yomer de shuka. But if it was a market day ready, he would have had a lot. He would have expected to have a lot of customers. He should have been going and then and advertising his wine so he can sell the whole thing off before it spoiled.
Right.
So if that's the case, then Loy, then no, because that's his fault for not selling it fast enough. He had enough, there were enough potential customers around here that he could have easily used up the whole barrel before it spoiled. Then he's the one who has to bear the loss.
Unless he proves that the market day was slow.
Yeah, unless he proves that there was, yeah, whatever. But Amar Rava, Haiman de Kabo Chamra. Okay, so I mentioned Tosfos explains it a little differently. Tosfos says that actually what we're talking about over here is he did actually sell it to him, but the deal was that he's going to sell it piecemeal in the store, so therefore it's similar to buying wine from mikvah. Again, it has to last for a while, therefore if it didn't last long enough, then the owner of the wine bears the loss.
So he should have had to sell it to mikvah or not?
No, in this case he doesn't have to say for mikvah. The fact that he's buying it in order to sell it in a store little by little, or he's selling it, obviously he needs it to last a while, yeah. Okay. Another case of Omer Rava, Haiman de Kabo Chamra Adaita de Mamtile de Pagosa de Volshvat. If a person accepts responsibility, where he's going to take a barrel of wine, he's going to take a barrel of wine from somebody with the provision that he is going to bring it to the port of Volshavat, which is a famous port in Volvo. We learned about it in Volvo as well. It was a major center for trading wine. Now the point is that Rashbam says here what we're talking about is it's not like the previous case where he just accepted it on consignment. He doesn't actually own the barrel. The original owner owns the whole barrel, and he's just selling it on his behalf. Here, what we're talking about is they made an ista of it. They made it that each of them is putting in, is putting up half the money for the venture, or each one they pooled their money to buy the barrel of wine. So now the deal was that again he's going to take the wine, he's going to bring it to Volshavat, he's going to sell it over there, and they'll share the profits exactly. Yeah. So it's an iska. Now va'admati dehasam zol. Now meanwhile what happened is. Now, so what would happen is like this, the Rashbam says, if, let's say, on the way it got lost or it got broken or what have you, then they would each have to bear half loss. But over here, since the person told him, Mahapila, the one who's not going, told him, Mahapila, the only thing that we're making this iska for is specifically, I want you to take this barrel and sell it in Volshavat. But now what happens? The Admati Hassan, he did go to Volshavat, but by the time he got there, Zol, the price of it went down, so now there's not going to be any profit. Do you know who the Makabale? The din is that the partner who stayed behind, the investing partner, is the one who's going to have to bear the loss. Because the other guy did what he was supposed to. He told him specifically, you have to go to Volshavat. You can't sell it anywhere else. So therefore, if he came there and he couldn't sell it for a good price to make a profit, then that's his problem. The one who went there did whatever
he
was supposed
to. Even though they were partners?
Yeah, but yeah.
But wait a minute, the guy who accepted to bring the wine to Volshavat should also share.
No, but that's what I'm saying, because he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to bring it to Volshavat, and he brought it to Volshavat. Not his fault that the prices went down.
No, he could have said, if I bring it to Volshavat, the prices might go down.
But
he should have said no.
It's a known thing, prices go up and down.
That's the point. If it's a known thing, that
it's a known
said, if the prices change, you're bearing the loss.
No, because if he said that, then fine. But if they didn't say anything, then the assumption is the investing partner, the one who stayed behind, knows that prices can go up and down.
Okay.
He could have told him, he could have given him the option.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to go all the way to Bolshevik. If you can find some place before that to sell it at a profit, go ahead and do that. Like this, he tied his hands. He told him that you can't sell it until
you accept it.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The fact that he could have said,
look, I'll do that, but if the prices change,
no,
you're bearing the loss.
If he said that, fine. But the point is, even if he didn't say that, because even if the price had gone up right away, he still would have had to go to Volshavat because that was his hands are tied. So therefore, it's considered to be completely in the other guy's shush because he forced him to go all the way there rather than find someplace locally to sell it at a profit. Now, the question is, Iboyler, who have a cholamai, what about if instead of the price going down, what if before he got it to Bolshevik, what if it became vinegar?
Well,
not necessarily. On the one hand, you could argue it's your wine, it's your kamkam, like we said before. On the other hand, do we say mazlach gara? Basically, do we go like a b'yisib of chanina, or do we go like a b'yisib of chanina?
Who is it? Do we go like
Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, that the partner who is going to Bolshevik can say, yes, but it's your wine, it's your barrel, why am I responsible? You obviously gave me defective wine. Or can we say like Rabbi Chia Yosef? No, that he can say, but after all, your mazel, you're the one who's handling the wine, and therefore it's your mazel, obviously you're... No, because it goes according to who actually has the owner. No, well then it wouldn't be all of him, it would be half and half. It'd be half, but he'd at least have to bear half the loss.
You can say to Captain Marvel and the same.
But it's one or the other. So therefore, Amalet of Hillel Rabashi, Ki Havon Beit Rav Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Amalon, he told us, Chol Aloy. No, if it became vinegar, then the owner doesn't have to accept the whole loss, then it's half and half. We do go like Rabbi Chia Yosef. Which is not like Rabbi Yosef HaChanina, but rather like Rabbi Chia Yosef. The Ikadamri, or another version, is Afilo Cholonami Makabel, but no, even if it turns sour, also the investing partner has to bear the whole loss. Kiman could Rabbi Yosef HaChanina, and that would be like Rabbi Yosef HaChanina, because again, the traveling partner can argue, but after all, it was your barrel and your wine, so obviously there was something wrong with it in the first place. And since that's the second lashon of the Gemara, then that's the halacha. And since anyway the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina earlier in our Gemara, then that's how it is. So either way, at the beginning of our story, right after the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina l'shana l'makan kanim v'lakeiach av v'makan kanim d'marta. So therefore, so the bottom line is, if he told him, if he didn't tell him, you have to go all the way to Baal Shafar, then fine, they'd have to each take half the loss because he could have sold earlier. But like this, because his hands were tied, then regardless whether the price went down or whether it turned to vinegar, either way we say that the investing partner is the one who has to bear the entire loss.
He cannot be considered a shliach.
He is a shliach, but still, he's a shliach who can't decide. A shliach is responsible, fine, but only when he has the freedom to be able to do what to be able to make the best deal or whatever. He didn't. He was specifically told he has to go to Bolshevik and he can't do anything before.